Round two.
David King's up.
Alright, so we're going to continue with another round of questions. David, you are up.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to revisit the triple bottom line concept that Sam mentioned earlier on in this meeting. Ford has a unique, I think, sort of triple bottom line challenge in our community. Basically, the port has to either generate or find sufficient revenue to support its operations. At the same time, it must fulfill the mandate of Washington Ports to promote economic development. And it also provides a critical role in our unique maritime culture. So the question for the panelists is, how will you balance, how will you provide leadership and guidance to balance the conflicts that arise from this, and how do you propose to, I want to be a little more specific about our sort of local maritime culture, because it's not just a fuzzy, soft thing. It's public access and it's the preservation of cultural and environmental values. So those three bottom lines, and I know from direct experience that they don't always, are not always in sync. They come into conflict with each other, and each of them has individual stakeholder groups. So how will you provide and provide leadership and guidance for that in terms of the ongoing dialogue at the port?
Greg, you're up.
So my experience has been at the Port of Seattle, they also have a triple bottom line. And, you know, not everything that counts can be counted, and not everything that counts is worthwhile. It's really hard. There's a lot of intangibles that you have to really kind of have a feel for, and I think you have to have a relationship. You do have to put it out, and basically when we put forward like business initiatives, what we did was we would line out all the considerations and it would be transparent to everyone, especially in anything that would go before the commission, you would see that. It's embedded in everything that you do, because you already have, frankly, there's so much pressure from every direction to represent the social and economic development in a more of a qualitative manner. Frankly, there's so much pressure on that there's almost very little emphasis on the financial. So when you look at a lot of these business initiatives, you look at the return, it's maybe negative or marginal, but that's okay as long as everybody makes a conscious decision to do that going forward. And I don't think there's anything wrong with any of those things. That's why I said, like in Quilcene, it may not make money now, but it could in the future. I think what I did was basically, again, my theme is, I'm going to tell you, is going to try to raise the water level so all the boats rise. Because if you do well, you can do good. And a lot of these things go away, a lot of this contention. So for instance, like Quilcene, I turn around and I would really look at that asset and I'd look at it really closely and I would put together a business plan to how to generate revenue. That's what I've done with all the assets. Basically, we had a portfolio of assets and we would do it systematically through every asset. And then we would also roll it up into an aggregate to make sure it fits within the overall plan. You know, that did make sense. And there was a lot of things that we said no to. I mean, for every deal you do, there's many, many deals, especially in the government agency, that you don't do. So it isn't just that all money's created equal. We already know that. So there are some things where it's not palatable. And every deal that I put forward for the commission, I bet 1,000% over 13 years. I usually just brought forward winners. And all those are still paying off, and they still service a lot. I did stuff for the Coast Guard. I developed a whole site for the Coast Guard, and that is for parking. They were getting parking tickets at $38 a crack for all these people that didn't know any better, and they parked across the road in dirt by the railroad tracks. So we redeveloped that, and I built it all to the U.S. Coast Guard, the federal specification for security and across the board, so they could condemn that property at some point in the future when they get the money. And it's just a transfer over. But I added value, and so when we go to sell that property, which we will eventually, the port will, they'll get a lot of value out of that. So that'll be cash that they can redirect. But that's one of those unique situations where you might surplus property. So that gives you, it's not a perfect answer, but that's where it is.
Triple bottom line, very prominent philosophy in the strategic plan 2010-2015 that again was incorporated into the 2013 comprehensive scheme. So for those not familiar with the parlance, essentially you're not just looking at the bottom line of your financial situation at the end of the day, you're also looking at your social impacts and consequences and your environmental impacts and consequences. And obviously that's extremely important for us here. It's important in Washington State through the Growth Management Act, but it seems to play out even more so in a town like this. Obviously, for those folks who have been around, you've seen some campaigns before, like Rite Aid, Wrong Town, or what was it, Frankly Scarlet, I Do Give a Darn, for the Hollywood video issue. But, I mean, we're very protective of what we have here, and we don't want to, in a sense, to change ourselves so that we don't recognize ourselves anymore. So that is very important. It's not just growth. We've already said that today. It's not just growth for growth's sake, but it's the appropriate growth. It's growth that's styled to us. It's things that we can be proud of and want to move ahead. And there's all kinds of opportunities that are forward-thinking with respect to energy or agriculture and other sectors that are environmentally responsible, socially equitable, and socially responsible businesses. And that's what we're going to promote, and that's what we're going to look to. The metaphor that Greg uses about the rising tide raises all boats is a great economic metaphor. It also sort of connotes this other thing, though, which I'm sure he didn't mean to say, which is what do we do about other threats that are of the environmental variety, such as the data that suggests that sea level rise is going to be something we have to contend with, not just sort of an overall trend that's disturbing, but also storm surges during winter seasons that we can expect in the future and need to plan for. So regardless of your philosophy about that, are humans responsible or not through our actions, the data does suggest that there are probabilities, high probabilities, that we're going to experience that. So in some ways, we need to protect the assets that we have, and a lot of them, of course, are right here on the near shore against that kind of threat. That's just an example of the kinds of investments that we need to consider seriously in order to both protect what's already here and consider moving into a safer location for some of those assets, like whole communities are doing, like, for example, on the West End with the Kulyu tribe. So all those aspects need to be considered very seriously in this case. And I think that my experience in trying to do a comprehensive plan, which is a balance of all those interests, is going to be a perfect training ground, if you will, for moving into this area. Because, as I mentioned before, not everybody was happy with the results of this process. And, you know, being the point person for that isn't always easy. But I learned a lot through that process. And I do think we had some successes. There are still things to work out. But you're going to have people with widely disparate perspectives. You're going to have all the way from, you know, property rights are the most important thing in the world, or economic growth at any cost, all the way to you're simply not doing enough to protect the environment. And somewhere in the middle there, you're going to find the solution. In this particular case, with respect to the boatyard permit, some of those priorities are going to be chosen for us. Just like undergrowth management, you know, there's best available science and critical areas regulations you have to follow. But nonetheless, you still craft the local solutions for something that works for everyone.
So, David, I hear in your question not just the interest in how do you approach the concept of the triple bottom line, but really how do you bring together community groups and stakeholders and really to get them to move in a positive direction together. And when I had my company, ISE Consultants, I threatened for a long time to put professional cat wrangler on my business card, because I have quite a track record of really being able to bring together very diverse groups and move them towards action and common cause. And while this isn't necessarily related to the maritime industry, it is related to this community here. And I was the president of the food co-op board here. And can I tell you, if there's a group of constituents that you know can be hard to wrangle, I think it's them. And in my tenure there, was really able to focus the board. And everything from, okay, we are not going to have board meetings that go till midnight. We're gonna run this professionally, and we're gonna focus our time. We're gonna operate like the business that we are, serving the membership that we are, and we're going to address things in a systematic way. Develop the strategic plan for the co-op, and have really been able to see them, as a result of that strategic plan, invest in our local community, continue to expand, again, as one of the largest employers in Jefferson County. I've been able to do that in a variety of different settings. I've done everything from work on water rights issues, again, one of the most contentious issues known to humankind, to being able to negotiate leases between, when in San Juan County, I worked on a three-way lease of a solid waste facility between the town of Friday Harbor, San Juan County, and the private enterprise that was going to take it over. The town of Friday Harbor and San Juan County had not been able to reach agreement on basically anything for, I think, a couple decades. And negotiations had broken down at one point. At one point, I went down to the town administrator, walked into his office, and said, "Duncan, I need 5 minutes of your time." And he said, I don't think we can get this off the ground. And I pulled out these cards that I had made. And they were 3x5 cards, and I put clip art and things on them. I said, "It's time for us to put all of our cards on the table. Here's what the town's going to get." And I said, "You're going to get a tipping floor. You're going to get this. This is what the county's going to get. This is what the vendor's going to get. This is what the community's going to get. Here's how the environment's going to benefit. Here's how the business is going to benefit." And I laid it literally out in 3x5 cards at the end. And by the end, he was laughing, and he said, Okay. "You've got a deal. I will take this to my council. I'm very sure that I can get it, pass it on one condition." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "I get to use your cards." and you know, it's kind of a funny, lighthearted story, but it's also how I operate in a lot of situations, because at our scale in our community, it's so much about that personal relationship. It's about your willingness to really meet with the person that you have in front of you and deal with them, you know, straight up and say, "How are we going to make this work?" Thank you.
Okay. Last question. This is for me anyway. This is pretty tough because the Chamber, you know, represents about 42% of the business community right now, many of which are in marine trades. And I also serve on the board of Team Jefferson EDC. So people really know to come to us for advocacy, and you should see my inbox. I have about 25 questions, at least, for you that are all different and varying. So I'm hoping that down the line here, some of them are going to be answered. But I'm really hopeful to hear you talk about the future and to really think of, you're talking about strategic planning. And Josh, you even touched on climate change, so I want to address climate change. It's our hope that you're going to be with us for at least a decade or two. That would be fantastic. Leadership changes like this create, there's a lot that goes into the 16 plus years that we've had here, and there's a lot that's going to go into the time with you. But when you think about the future and all of the businesses in our community, what are your thoughts around climate change, particularly as it relates to sea level rise? We're going to have to really ponder, or not. I don't know. I'd love to know where you stand on that. And how important do you think it is to our future strategic plan and our actions moving forward?
Apologies for pre-answering that question.
You're off the hook.
Yeah, well, so at least I can leave the intro stuff out. You know, there was an excellent planning process that happened on the North Olympic Peninsula, and Kate was part of the leadership team for that process. And as a, you know, DNR staff person, I participated in work groups. I thought that was an innovative way to get a lot of the ideas out and the work done. There was also a lot of science introduced into that process through Washington Sea Grant and other partners. So the maps have actually been integrated into the draft capital repair and replacement plan for the Port of Port Townsend dated December 2015. So you can see the maps right there and how it might affect the assets that the port holds. So we don't know what the future holds. We don't know whether those, you know, maps will come true, if you will. But it's clear that there are things happening, weather-wise, climate-wise, water-wise, etc., that are most likely going to continue, let's say. Probability is such, and so these are things that we need to plan for. Already we've identified over $16 million worth of things we need to worry about, never mind the airport runway. So it's a difficult time to also try to think proactively and say, okay, now we're going to ask the community to invest X amount of dollars into technological fixes or other solutions to try to protect our assets against something we don't know is going to happen. And I think that has been bothering humanity, if you will, all across the globe, because, I mean, the majority of scientists anyway believe that, you know, we're going to see a warming climate. We can see evidence of that all over the place, polar ice caps just being an example. So what are we going to do collectively to solve those problems? It's a huge problem, and it's when you have a ship at sea, as Greg, I'm sure, knows with his maritime experience, you know, it takes a long time to kind of turn it and move it in a different direction. That's metaphorically speaking, though, at least we have the ability, I think, to be more nimble at a local level, and we're dealing with very specific, tangible things. So I think that is something that we need to work on. In terms of, I'll use maybe one more minute left, if I have it, to just talk a little bit more about how maybe to involve all the people that you mentioned and the stakeholders and others in this kind of conversation to make those tough choices and analyze where we're at. And I know that we like homegrown ideas here. I mean, there's no problem with taking in ideas from other places, but there's a lot of stuff that happens here, a lot of creativity. One of those things is a training I went to on dynamic facilitation and wisdom councils, which apparently are now in vogue in certain places in Europe because of somebody who lives here in Port Townsend. So we use the wisdom council process both at DCD and to solve a mooring buoy / shellfish conundrum in the tri-area, where we use this facilitation process to bring in, essentially randomly selected, if that's the best way to go about it, stakeholders throughout the community, throughout the business community in this case, to get together and to use dynamic facilitation to do choice generation, to come up with statements essentially that group creates and then concurs with. I mean, that's usually what happens at that process. So it's a good way to help develop consensus in kind of an innovative methodology. And I think that something like that might be in play here, both in solving all of the port's issues, but in particular trying to deal with climate change impacts that we can be expecting.
We have a changing environment, and I think there are, again, different scales that you can be responsive to that on. One of the things that we've been working at San Juan County Public Works is converting our facility fleet to electric vehicles. We're also looking at bringing some electric vehicles into our other fleet of vehicles. We are looking at, again, as a county of islands, what effect that storm surges and sea level rise have on our shorelines. And so I have a lot of experience at facing those issues. So it's the capital improvement projects that we're looking at. And I think that we really need to have some very robust discussions about those things. I think it's also we need to then look at how the port can be a leader. And I worked with the Conservation District in San Juan County to develop a community solar project to place solar panels on all the schools throughout the islands. This is not only then bringing down the cost of operations for the school, but will eventually generate revenue for them. Been partnering with Opalco up there, which is a cooperatively owned utility company. They're bringing a lot of renewable energy online. So it's how are we going to really address things at the local level? Climate change brings with it not just storm surges, not just sea level rise, but ocean acidification. That faces one of our largest employers in South County. Again, I work with Coast Seafood to help them and get their new intake and their filtering system, which will position them better in the face of ocean acidification. I'm also, as I mentioned earlier, the policy analyst for marine issues with San Juan County. And this goes everything from, you know, how much oil is being transported by ship through our waters. And I can tell you, it is very frightening. And while we have a very robust traffic control system in our waters, and the Coast Guard has a tremendous track record to stand on, the fleet is changing, the products are changing, and the risks are changing. And I think that we need to be addressing that. Port Townsend would be, if there was a spill at the most probable place up by Stewart Island in Boundary Pass, Port Townsend and Jefferson County would see oil on its shores in about 6 hours. So we need to be participating at that level too, and making sure that our voices are being heard. And I can tell you, it's kind of, I showed up a meeting with vessel traffic folks up in Bellingham. I was the only local government representative there. I told them, I kind of feel like a bad blind date, and you need to invite us in. We need to be at the table. Was able to get some funding to address those issues, and so I have quite a bit of experience, and we all need to be, it's a comprehensive issue, and we need to be working together to address them at many different levels.
So, climate change is, I think it's almost very difficult to argue that there's not climate change taking place. I mean, it's just overwhelming. So I think you have to kind of move past whether or not that's actually going to happen or not, and to what degree. The work that's already been done out there, I think we should probably take that and start building on it and building on it now. And that includes also funding any kind of initiatives down the road. So it's a lot easier if you look at the plan, there's like a capital plan, and they were going to set aside a couple of different funds for capital. It's a lot easier if we start putting aside money now, so that when we reach that point, we have compounding, that we have a cash flow that we can react when there is any kind of contingency. You really have to have, I can't stress this enough, it's a lot easier to have a larger reserve fund where you can actually go in, but you have to start saving now. I mean, just think and look back, right? What do you want to do for, you know, for my grandkids? I'm already setting money aside for them. So I look at it, if I ever have any, I guess we'll have to, I might keep it otherwise. So, but really, truly, you have to look at it. It's a lot easier if you start just acknowledging that and looking way further out in the advance. And actually, it's got to survive all of us in the room, right? I mean, I'm not going to be here when it's really probably going to affect it. It's not going to be within the next 20, 30 years. So I think what you have to do is we have to sit down with the county, the city, and we have to look at the state level and the feds, and we have to go through like a master planning process for what the contingency really is. And then it just could be broad brush, like what you've got, but build on it, and then start a plan. So when they go in and talk about zoning, about all these things, that we start moving in that direction, if that's what we're going to do. So, and I think, you know, honestly, you can sit there and plan all you want, but if you don't have funding, and if you're going to be dependent upon other people for your funding, good luck. You better really be a phenomenal lobbyist, truly, because everybody's going to want money. I mean, everybody's going to be affected. So I think we should just start now. And then, you know what? If it doesn't happen, it's still money that we have to fund other things as we go forward, because it'll be, you know, we'll start probably seeing impact supposedly within about 30 years. So, thank you.
So, I'm wondering, everyone has a little bit different take on this, but what do you see as the fundamental roles and responsibilities of the port director that divide between the port director's responsibilities and the commissioner's responsibilities? How do you see that? How do you see that going? Where do you defer to the commission? Where do you take the reins in your hands and gallop forward?
Thanks, Sam.
What was the second? Oh. That was a good question. I was just going to let you go, Greg. I thought it was awesome.
So I think the relationship between the executive director and the board commission fundamentally has to be built on trust. And it has to be that the commission will trust the executive director to follow their direction. But they also have to trust that the executive director is not just going to say yes to everything, because it's really the job to give you the data, to give you the alternatives, and to be rigorous about that. And that's a two-way street. I've been on both sides of the table. I've worked with a lot of boards and nonprofits in board development. I think understanding the roles and responsibilities of each is very important. And I also think, but it's not necessarily just a clean line of you stay over here and I'll stay over here. Because as I tell my staff, particularly at the Department of Community Development, because we would have the county council members call us regularly, and staff would sometimes get agitated. Why are they calling me? And I'm like, because they are answerable to their constituency, and we need to be answerable to them. It is not interference. We have to be able to be penetrable, to be able to have people be able to get in and get information. And so there's that responsiveness that I think is absolutely required. But I think it's also about creating a synergy. And that's something that, again, that I think that I've excelled at, and really helping people to bring their best game. And that is, you know, I'll go back to my experience with the food co-op board. When I first started there, you know, people did not bring their best game. They really brought the intent to sit down and argue. And they wanted to argue their point, and more than anything, they wanted to be right. And over again, I had to ask them, are you more interested in being right, or are you more interested in being effective? And in being effective, you really need to be able to find that common ground, to find your common interest. And that is really what my kind of the base that I operate from is, being able to find common interest in groups. And I've done it many, many times with large groups of stakeholders, and have been able to find the common interest, be able to move the group forward to action. So in my mind, it's not just about going, oh great, we all agree. It's not necessarily about agreement. It's about, what are you going to do? How are you going to actually operationalize this?
So fundamentally, I look at the commission as a governance model. So they're there to set direction, and the executive director is there to execute that vision. You know, the reality is that unless the commissioners, it's extremely demanding already in terms of their time, and unless they're full-time commissioners, you know, drawing a salary more like a city council person, you know, they just don't have the bandwidth to do everything. They're going to have to delegate to the executive director, and the executive director's got to be able to go forward with that. Now, there might be times when I'm going to disagree with the direction that we're headed, but it's my responsibility to follow the direction that I'm given through the commission. And I want everything to be transparent with everybody. I don't think that it's rocket science, to be honest with you, in common sense. However, you're going to have sometimes when commissioners are going to want to be involved in a very specific issue or multiple issues, right? And that is, of course, that's their right. So you have to adjust according to certain personal styles as well, right? Some people go, I want to be hands off, I don't want to get engaged. Other people go, I want to be fully engaged, and that's fine too. However, leave the method and means to the executive director and the staff. That's what we do. That's what we're getting paid for. So if we're not following the right direction, then I expect a course correction. And I think that the staff and myself, we're going to have to be flexible. So if they suddenly, it's their right to change their mind, change direction, if they think that's going to represent all of your interests. And that's fine too. So that's kind of I've worked with all sorts of boards. I've been on both sides, so I also, you know, I kind of have that empathy. But I don't think it's that super complex, to be honest with you. You can make it more complex if you want, but I don't think it is.
So under the statute that guides ports in Washington, as well as the guidance materials supplied by the Washington Public Ports Association, it's very clear. The commission governs, the director administers, they decide what, I decide how, they request information, I seek and provide it, they create and adopt policy, I recommend and then carry out that policy, they monitor the progress and I report about the progress. And most importantly, they represent the public interests by the different districts, the three districts in our county, and then I act in the public interest. So I will say that as a community planner, And as I mentioned before, I'm a member of the American Planning Association. I'm also a certified planner by the American Institute of Certified Planners. There's a very specific ethical set of codes and responsibilities that I need to follow in that. These are the types of things that planners are trained for, because planners, whether they're city planners or private planners or county planners or what have you, have to work with elected officials. And so that's something that we're essentially trained to do. And I've had experience doing that, as I mentioned before, with the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners. There have been times when, as staff, we provided a certain recommendation and they took it in another direction, which is their responsibility to do as elected officials. Nonetheless, we defended that decision, sometimes in front of the Western Washington Growth Management Hearings Board. So I'm used to doing that kind of thing. I worked for a board that was composed of 3 Republicans, a board that was composed of 3 Democrats, and then any combination in the middle. Here, the port is nonpartisan, and fortunately, these gentlemen agree about everything, so there's no problem right now. But I mean, there will be times, even when you have to navigate as a director, a situation where you don't have agreement among the port commissioners themselves. And so I've been in that situation before, and I know I'm very aware of what that role is as a director, and very comfortable in that situation.
Okay, I guess I'm going to change the tenor of the questioning. Up to this point, we've asked very specific questions about policy and standards and work relationships and all of that. So this is more like a visioning exercise for each one of you. The date is May 6, 2024. And we are all sitting here in this room and celebrating the achievements of the port under your leadership. Being specific, including capital investments, like maybe you built a float plane dock down in Quilicine that's generating income nobody believed. That kind of specifics is what I'm looking for. Please describe what improvements exist in Quilicine, the airport, and the marina now in place that we're not here in 2016. And Abigail, give them a little bit of time, okay? This is a very different question, but you should be able to paint a picture for us that all of us here would recognize.
In Quilicine specifically?
No, Quilicine, the airport, and the marina.
Everywhere.
Especially in Quilicine.
But it's... What are we going to see in 2024 that's different than here? Maybe we'll have a bulwark out here, you know, and that's our answer to sea level rise. But be specific.
So first, I think you have a really, really robust strategic plan and capital plan, frankly. It needs some updating, but I think it's great. And you have a great budget and operating plan. I think that given 9/11, given the financial crisis, there's a lot of issues out there that, frankly, the pre-existing staff and commissions have really dealt with very effectively. Going forward, I would say that obviously looking at that capital plan, the layout, we're just going to knock out those things systematically. I think you're going to see that over at the Boat Haven, the breakwaters are going to get replaced. We're going to, you know, they'll pave the airport. But I think going forward, you know, I look at, let's say, the wait list for the port. You have 160 vessels. I did a pro forma on that. If you had all 160 of them, you monetize that value with that, you know, a dry boat rack, for instance, that's $700,000. If you get 50% of it, you got $350,000. So you're going to see an increased use of all these facilities and revenue pumping through here. We're going to have a business plan that's going to put a lot more business going through the boatyard. We'll probably have to look at all the assets to see what the age is. I don't know if the travel list, they just put a new engine in that travel lift, the 300 tonner. But it may be that, you know, we have we're looking at a 550 ton. We're going to have larger cash reserves. I would say, you know, I'd hope to start building an additional 2 to 4 million cash reserve above and beyond what we have for cash. And I'll be looking at trying to establish hopefully a 4 to 5 million minimum of a net operating income. You know, I look around and I look at all the possibilities. I don't know all the possibilities. You know, you guys have also brainstormed. You have the advantage of having a lot of different dialogues here that I don't know about. But I would sit down and I brainstorm those, and I can take business opportunities and I can turn them into a reality. That's what I did for 13 years at the Port of Seattle. So, yeah, I thought about the, you know, getting plane service up here. I talked to people. I worked with Eric Gauss over at, he's an executive director of Painfield. I talked to him about GA and how you actually increase general aviation, and you have a demographic that's aging. So there's going to be certain things that maybe you can or can't, but getting Kenmore Air to come up here and start servicing this, you got to increase, you got to put together a marketing plan that's cohesive across everybody here. It should be transparent to everybody, all the key organizations, and then you need to actually execute that plan. So, you know, I think if you got air service coming up here, and you know, and where you would actually locate that at, whether it be Cool Scene or some other place, but you see the breakwaters and the infrastructure are going to have to be updated, and there's going to have to be a huge effort, and we're going to have to work with the city on that. You're going to see the stormwater retention pond, or you're going to have some sort of a definitive answer on the stormwater issue, so that at least that risk is going to go away for the boatyard, I think. Then whether or not you're going to see some dust mitigation and whether we have the revenue, a lot of it is going to be driven about how much revenue that we have in order to be able to fund these things. You could dream big, which is great. I'm all about it. We redeveloped Terminal 91. They said it would never get done. They said you'll never be able to build a 62,000 square foot manufacturing facility, and we did it. So I think that you can do, I mean, I did lots of other smaller business deals that were, they're routine almost, frankly. So I think that that's what we have to do is put our minds together collectively and then make sure they're prioritized and establish funding mechanism for sure.
So we were joking at halftime that this is almost like a political forum where like we're running for office or something, and it may be the closest I ever come to such a thing, but this question kind of reminds me of that, because in some ways it's like you're being asked to make promises of all the things that you're going to be able to do in your first term. Now, I'm sure that Gordon didn't mean it like that, because it's more like this is about dreaming big and visualizing things in the future, but I think it's a balance between being very positive and proactive than with promising things that are going to be hard to keep all those promises. So with that caveat in mind, then I'll go through the visioning exercise for 2024. First of all, thanks for bringing up that date, because it is, again, the centennial of the port. So I think celebrating the port's success over the past 100 years, everybody who's been involved in the community, you know, of course, the port is not just, of course, the commissioners and the director and the rest of the staff, you know, it's the tenants, it's the businesses, it's all the customers, it's everybody in the community. So it's everybody's port, and it would be a great time to celebrate. So I'm picturing it being in that role and making sure that that's what we're doing, that we're reflecting back and forward at the same time, looking forward and recognizing that milestone with a comprehensive centennial scheme. So in that sense, we'll have updated our comprehensive scheme. We'll have adopted not only the capital repair and replacement plan, but integrated that information and prioritization into the budget process so that we're fully taking care of the priorities, as well as mapping out how we're going to address the remaining issues that have been identified. We'll have finished the airport job. We'll have finished the breakwater. We'll work, I think, with partners over there in Point Hudson area, certainly the partners that run the Wooden Boat Festival, to see if we can make sure that they're participating in helping to make that area viable for the Wooden Boat celebration there every year. So that includes maybe participating in helping to build that breakwater. So we're celebrating that success. And we have at least the plan, if not shovels in the ground already, for the Echo Industrial Park out at the airport. With the infrastructure being supplied by the port for to energize private business, to bring in more opportunities, to have existing businesses that have no room to grow, perhaps to locate there, new businesses to come in that we could be proud of, that produce the kind of goods that we want to be known for throughout the state and the world. So I think that looking forward, I visualize people that enjoy and like and trust and appreciate the port. So I think right now, I mean, we have those feelings now somewhat, but I also sense that there's some disgruntled folks out there about the port, maybe, and I certainly don't want to, you know, come in and start criticizing what's happened in the past. It's all about looking forward, but I'm just telling you what I hear, which is that some tenants or customers or whomever have felt maybe like they weren't given the attention that they were due or weren't listened to, or their issues weren't considered, and they're feeling like, geez, it'd be nice to have a new culture here that that people can appreciate and be proud of and reflect on and celebrate in 2024, our centennial.
So 2024, my son will be 24. It'd be fantastic if he had a job here. And so I'm going to dream pretty big. 2024, I think that the port has built on its success already and its international reputation for being a home to incredible craftspeople, and that we have expanded that and on beyond the pardon me, the brand identity that exists with the marine trades into the other sectors of the economy. That we are known for place-based businesses, for things that you can only do here, or that people move here to do it here because the quality of life is so high. So, and that includes the agricultural community. We have cideries. We have, like, Finn River Farm is doing at the intersection of Chimicum, that the port is supporting those in the infrastructure development, that we are known at both our marina operations and every other piece of infrastructure that we've developed for really incorporating the cutting edge technologies that we know that are better for the environment, that are actually more cost effective and provide a better return on investment in the long run. Our breakwaters are known for not only protecting the marinas, but how do you do it in a fish-friendly manner? How do you actually incorporate that technology so that when you are protecting your infrastructure, you're being respectful of the very resource that your fishing fleet is going out after? We're known for a place that captures the imagination, for a place that dreams up ideas like the Race to Alaska, and marries that wild imagination with how do you actually build it? How do you actually make it float on the water? And how do you build the infrastructure to support it? We're known as the leader in green technologies. We have been a leader in renewable energy. I don't care whether it's solar panels on all of our buildings or the use of electric vehicles, whatever it is, but we are always looking forward of how do we address this changing climate with the things that we can do right here at home. So we are leaders. We are a place where our kids come back and go, I want to be here. I can make a living here, and I can make a living here doing quality work. Because if there's anything I believe that motivates any human being, it is right livelihood. And it's that ability to really attach and to recognize that every human being has the right to be able to live that and to be able to put their work energy into something that they believe in and has meaning for them. And that is something that the port can do. It's sometimes hard to draw that line between how does a stormwater pond do that, but it does. Thanks.
Okay, once again, a drill down question this time. We've talked a lot about the port's assets, and we all know that many of them are in trouble and need attention right away. But I'd like to ask about the non-performing assets that the port holds. All of us own those assets, all the citizens of Jefferson County, they are ours. But we depend on the port director and the port commissioners to be stewards on our behalf. And we need you, obviously, to be thoughtful and skillful and wise about those assets, as well as the assets that we need to maintain because they are now performing. So I see three basic approaches to non-performing assets. You can make them perform in some way. You can convert them into resources that will perform continuously, not just one time. Or you can hold them for an undescribed future, an unknown future, given all the things we've talked about with the changing environment. Tell us what your basic approach to non-performing assets is and how you might manage the ones that the port now holds.
Okay, so lots of work has been done in the past, and it's time to refresh that work and get more detailed about it. So the 2013 comprehensive scheme does list all of the assets, and now we have the repair and replacement plan information that, again, needs to be adopted and then integrated into the budget. And then once you do that, looking over that inventory of assets and coming up with plans and contingencies and alternatives for each of those is an important part of the public process and then for the commission to decide. I'm also not a fan of just divesting or getting rid of assets. I think it's taken a long time for the port to acquire those public assets. And so, for example, just selling off some of the land, for example, I don't think it would be the first choice. I mean, perhaps it may be a choice after full analysis, but I think there has to be a certain reluctance and reticence to do that as a first solution. However, converting, say, public the buildings, for example, and infrastructure on the property to a private company and selling, that's another possibility. It just happened right down the road here recently where the port maintained the property for the public and then now rents out the facility. But it was really the private business that was in a better position to upgrade and maintain that facility, more so than the port, just because the port is trying to manage a multitude of assets at once. So I think that those opportunities need to be looked at. Other public-private partnerships where, again, the port uses all the tools in the toolbox that the port has that other entities, be they business or government, don't have to do. There's statute that talks about marginal lands. Maybe even the port could acquire more lands. It seems like an odd thing to do perhaps at first when we already have so many assets that we're worried about maintaining. But again, it's all about opportunities and vision. If the port could acquire on behalf of the public lands that are not being used and come up with a way that could be a net positive gain to both create economic opportunity and jobs with some amount of investment for a larger payoff over time, then that's a good thing to do. It's all got to pencil out. And of course, we can do that work here. We've got talent and the brain power to do that, but there's also, there's always times to bring in other experts, whether it's engineering experts or financial experts, et cetera, to be able to do those types of studies. And I've been in parts of teams where we bring in the right people to help us make those kinds of choices. Going back to sort of the full countywide perspective, obviously, as we mentioned before, you've got major assets here and right here close to where we're present today, but you've also got the rest of the county to think about. I already mentioned the airport before, so that's an obvious candidate, but there are other candidates as well. There's the property on Linger Longer that I think there's aspects of it that there's still some decisions to be made on how to utilize the rest of that property and also deal with some aging infrastructure there in terms of the marina. There's, as I mentioned, the possibility to look elsewhere to partner up and perhaps even acquire land or provide the mechanism by which others can succeed. As was mentioned, the agricultural community. Right now, maybe there are the types of investments that each individual farmer or agribusiness can't make on its own, but a public infusion using the tools in the toolbox, using the industrial development district tools or the export company tools or other ways to raise revenue in order to create the situation in which others can thrive, that seems to be the best way of moving forward, considering that the port itself doesn't have an extreme cash reserve in order to be able to make that outlay and do it on its own. So it's going to have to be about partnerships, and I think that the port is in a prime position to help that conversation and work with all the partners, the chamber, the EDC, etc., who are out there, come up with those successful enterprises.
The first thing that I would do is to make sure that we're in agreement about what performance is and what non-performance is. And particularly in the context of triple bottom line or bringing in other factors of how you measure success. I think also being rigorous in making sure that we're not externalizing cost of other opportunities, because I believe that frequently happens, that we can look at alternatives and we can take a great deal of the cost of some and just externalize those, and it skews our decision making. So I'd want to come to agreement about what does success look like, what does performance look like, what does non-performance look like. And I think in then having those conversations, then you really look for the opportunities for partnership. Again, I'm experienced in really bringing together public-private partnerships. I've done that in many different arenas, including in San Juan County, where you really bring in somebody else that, in a lease agreement, and you bring to bear what the port has to offer, which is oftentimes the infrastructure or the financing opportunities, some of the other mechanisms that we can use, and then couple that with the private enterprise. I think there's just tremendous opportunity to do that. I think that as we look at non-performing assets, again, what's the performance of the Fort Worden Beach? You know, that's a question, that's a conversation to have. I agree with the other two candidates that I'd be reticent to divest the port of property. I've worked on a lot of conservation strategies, and in particular, I remember there's a gentleman that moved to town here, Lee Springwater, who had worked on greenbelt activities and around San Francisco. He's like, you never get to go back and buy the property at the value that it was 20 years ago. So I'd be very rigorous in that analysis. And I would, again, come back to what does success look like? And that's because I believe that when you ask that question of what success look like, it not only orients you to where you want to go, but then allows you to ask the questions along the way of how are you getting there? And it's one of the things I can tell you my staff can get annoyed with me sometimes, because I develop those questions and then I wander around and ask them that. You know, how many permits did we do this week? And it's creating that consciousness of what success looks like and really being able to put it in our daily activities that I think moves us forward. Thanks.
So I'm going to keep returning to this theme. You have to do well to do good. It's a lot easier. So I've had to take basically a portfolio. We had 200 acres of non-performing assets, and that was the whole mission, was to bring that into use and generate revenue, as well as, though, it's within all these constraints. There's all these sideboards in terms of what the mission of a port authority is. So I think those things are already embedded, honestly, in the process largely. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when we're going to redevelop some of these assets and what we can do to best position them. And you have to kind of look in terms of brainstorm of how you want to position that asset so that at least it's self-sustaining to some extent. There's going to be some assets potentially that are theoretically at least never going to be self-sustaining financially. I'm not sure I ever agree with that position. When I took over at the port in the manager of maritime operations, the managing director of the seaport and the director of finance in public session before commissions and everybody said maritime operations would never be profitable because we're too deep in the hole. And we built $3 million. We had three people primarily working on that across everybody. We had all the trades working and that kind of thing. And we built millions of dollars of renewable financial gain, and we improved all the assets across the board in every aspect, environmental BMPs, I mean, you name it. If you go down that facility, the response we got from, I've never seen a terminal this busy in all the years I've been down here at the port. So I think that if you put the expectation that's going to be non-performing, then that's what you're going to, you know, that's what you're going to accomplish. But if you look at the assets, you look at what's under the ground, you look at the submerged lands. I did a lease with Manson and General for $200,000 a year on submerged lands. It's just a cash cow. And they basically get to moor out there and we control the moorage. There are so many ways to generate revenue. Aquaculture is a big one. You know, we could look at just doing salmon pens where you actually release, like we do it with the Suquamish over at the grain terminal the Port of Seattle did. And that salmon comes back and then the fishermen get to gillnet it, basically. And it's a great program, and they already have a lot of infrastructure embedded, and they're ready to, they could scale up. So I think you have to look at all these independents. I drove around to all the only one I didn't get to was the Gardner boat ramp. I drove around to all of them. They all need work. I was in Hadlock. There's people kayaking there. You know, I talked to Steve Bell. He works, I guess, at Port Townsend Paper, and him and his wife were coming in. I think there's an incredible amount of opportunity, but you have to figure out also how to monetize it and what's really going to be palatable for all of you, right? So there will be points, but you can always say no. right? But you need to have that opportunity to say, here's some businesses, here's opportunities, and let the commissioners who represent all of you make a determination. But we will put all those opportunities again and again before them. So I don't believe that there's any such thing as a non-performing asset. And then you just have to look at how you fund it. Maybe it's through grant money, right? And then you improve those assets, like at Matt's Mats. I know people would go in there, but he goes, there's no services at Matt's Mats. When I talk to people who are big-time boaters. So I think that there are strategies that we can do and put together a marketing plan that will actually help us execute that, realize it. It actually is really, there's a lot of value to a real robust marketing plan that's targeted to generate the kind of use and the kind of revenue and profit that we need here desperately.
I guess we're done, and I just want to remind everybody too that this will be on our website, so if you want to re-listen to anything or just get something that you missed, please do so. Again, thank you, candidates. That was
A couple things before you leave. As Abigail said, thank you all very much for agreeing to do this. I would not want to, but I appreciate it. I thank you very much to the board for you folks making yourselves available and thinking about your questions, what wonderful questions you came up with. Thank you. And to the audience, so what the plan is, we are going to adjourn into executive session. We're going to talk about two things. One is, if there's a future question that we have of the candidates, we need to make a decision on that fairly quickly while you're here. And two, we could have action today. I don't know if we will or not. So we need to adjourn into executive session and discuss that. And then we will reconvene into regular session right after executive session. So if you want to hang out outside, or if you want to go to lunch or something like that, I don't think we can do that. I think we're just going to have to keep the ball rolling here. I'm getting a nod from our attorney, so.
We also need a duration.
Yeah, so we're going to, so this will, we are going to turn into executive session, possible decision. I'm going to pick 15 minutes with a possible extension to that. We can all extend. So we're going to adjourn into executive session for 15 minutes, and we will possibly extend. You guys did great.
Thank you.
We survived another one.
Yeah, where's the pizza?
Thanks, Pete.